Thunderbird.
How does it know that that building's torn down?
That's nice.
What's the season?
No, this season is not.
What's the reason?
Grapes are in season.
Yeah. Nice to know some things never change.
That's right.
There's comfort.
This was left by Lisa.
Let me see something.
Oh. Is there something else here to sign?
We got solid police here. Really?
What are you going?
All right, I'm going to start the meeting. We have Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Good evening, Sarah.
Just in case you forget your name.
All right, the meeting is called to order. We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Welcome, everybody. Come on in. Mary, will you call the roll, please?
Braverman.
Here.
Cluder.
Yes.
Alfred.
Here.
Duber.
Here.
Farron.
Here.
Klein.
Here.
Perry.
Here. Our first order of business is I need a motion to appoint Ryan Alstock as a part-time officer in the police department. Do I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Thank
I'll
you.
Second it.
Thank you, Mrs. Cluder. And Mayor, would you like to?
I'm going to call on Chief. Oh, I don't even have a microphone anymore. I'm going to ask Chief Custer to do the introductions.
If you would please use the microphone, Chief.
But now know, that Nick is
even back. Though it hardly works.
Let's do it this way to the council. Ladies and gentlemen of council, it's my honor to introduce to you Ryan Alstock. Ryan Alstock's 22 years old and lives in Stowe, Ohio. He's a graduate of Walsh Jesuit High School, also a graduate of Ohio University that majored in criminology and minored in psychology. After graduation, he went into the police academy at Kent State University and graduated in 2013. He enjoys staying physically active and volunteers coaching still at the freshman football team at Walsh Jesuit. His father, Joe, here is a 25-year veteran and lieutenant of the Solon Police Department. And his mother is currently the principal at Seton Catholic High School, Karen, in Hudson. He has one sister who's a sophomore at the Ohio University and is majoring in early childhood education. At this time, I would like Ryan to please stand and introduce any other friends and relatives that are in the audience at this time. Thank you. At this time, if you
we
could confirm.
Ryan's name for confirmation, please.
Any questions or comments? Mary, will you call the roll?
Braverman.
Yes.
Cluder.
Yes.
Alfred.
Yes.
Duber.
Yes.
Barron.
Yes.
Klein.
Yes.
Perry.
Yes.
Please join
thank
me
you.
To Ryan if your parents would like to come up here. They're welcome to as well.
And if anybody wants to take pictures, you're welcome to come behind.
Right behind you there.
What did you say?
I'm going to administer the oath of office. Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Ryan Alstock.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of Ohio.
The Constitution of the State of Ohio.
The rules, regulations, and charter of Orange Village.
The rules, regulations, and charter of Orange Village.
And that I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially.
No, faithfully, honestly, and impartially.
Discharge my duties.
Discharge my duties.
As a part-time member of the police department.
As a part-time member of the police department.
Of Orange Village.
Of Orange Village.
State of Ohio.
State of Ohio.
During my continuance in said office.
During my continuance in said office.
Me too.
In the badge on the summit. Thank you, Mayor.
This is the state of Ohio.
No, it cleared up after the interview this morning. It was so bad. Well, congratulations. You're all welcome to stay and enjoy our fascinating meeting.
Or you can go and celebrate.
Or you can go and celebrate. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
All right, in order to keep our bills, in order to keep our bills of our professionals at the lowest possible, I'd like to move ordinance B up in order. So I'd like to present ordinance 2013-22 as amended, an ordinance authorizing the mayor to enter into an agreement with Luansky Development LLC for development of real property in the village and related services. Although this is on for discussion only, we're still in special meeting slash work session, but we can talk about it. And Jeff, if you would like to take the microphone and fill us in on what's been happening.
Good evening. The development agreement has, you should have received both clean versions and I think marked versions showing changes, as well as a complete set of exhibits, which had previously hadn't been circulated. I think you received the exhibits earlier this week. I was advised at about 5:30 this afternoon there was a slight change to the declaration that was negotiated between the developer team and representatives of Waterford Court, relating to, in both the development agreement, which you may have received this evening, an updated version, and in the declaration itself, that related primarily to, sorry, but I just got it at 5:30. It was really just clarifying language as to some of the requirements concerning the mound and its relation to the PD6 parcel, as well as its relation to the neighboring parcels on Waterford Court. But by and large, from the village's perspective, as we see it, the development agreement, subject obviously to your comments, questions, and hopefully approval, is relatively complete, at least as far as the village's perspective is concerned. I'm happy to answer any questions. Many of the comments that you shared with us at the beginning of January were incorporated or at least considered, and some modifications made to clarify some of the points. But again, might be easier to answer any direct questions you all have to help clarify things further.
If I might, I can shed a little bit of light on what this latest issue is and where it's going and coming from. In the design of the mound, the actual...
Are you talking about the declaration now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm referring to the declaration refers to, and in the declaration and included in the exhibits, is a legal description of the property that will be included as PD6. And PD6 incorporates the mound over its length, but in terminating the mound, it extends beyond the physical enclosure of the PD6 legally described property. And there was an issue that came up concerning the potential to reconfigure PD6 to include this tie-in for the mound to be feathered back down and tied into the existing topography adjacent to it. And there's been some discussion about it with the understanding that it's while it's appropriate and necessary to tie the mound back to natural grade at some point, and that area may in fact occur outside the physical limits of PD6. take place at the end beyond the line of the defined enclosure of E6. So there was some minor language change made to ensure that that could occur and be properly addressed.
So they're gonna be going onto the homeowner's property to do the grading?
No, no, it's all on, it's all on the development parcel. It actually falls into PD4. But it's area that was always intended to be green space, even within the context of the plan for the development of PD4. But in order for it to not just abruptly end at PD6, and it has always been delineated this way in the grading plan and landscape plan that was created by Craig Corse from the outset, it extended beyond what was envisioned as the PD6, incorporated PD6 property.
As I understand it, and I'll defer to Judge Judd because he's got a better sense of it, but from a directional standpoint, the mound is the feathering of the mound will continue north of its current planned termination point, so it can then flow north from PD6 into PD4, but at all times it will remain west of the property line dividing the project property from Waterford Court and other properties along that property line.
What elevation is gonna feather over?
Well, this is basically the mound. We have, in order to bring the mound back down to natural grade.
That's what I mean, what height is the mound at the point where?
30 feet.
Well, it's 30 feet.
Oh, where it crosses the line.
Where it crosses, well, let's see.
Crosses the property line from PD6.
At PD6, where it would cross the property line, it would be, at some point, it will, it will go to its crest, and then it's falling back down, so the 30-foot mound will continue and wrap around the back of what will be the building in PD4.
That won't have any impact on the development itself?
No.
Because that was all going to be green space.
That was always anticipated to occur that way. The grading plan hasn't changed from the plan that was reviewed by Planning Commission back in July, or actually it would have been June that we acted on it, and it showed that the grading that way, but PD6, there's a little triangle of area that extends to the northwest that allows this the mound to return to the natural grade.
But it's still on the property of the development.
It's still on the property of the development.
Right.
There's a jog in the property at that corner where the property, the north line of the Waterford Court properties and the north line of what would be Orange Village and the PD6 area extends to the west, and then it heads north just about at the edge of what would be PD6. So in order to tie the grades back around and stay within their property and into Orange Village, it has to kind of wrap around, even though the PD6 area.
Can you look at Exhibit F?
Or G?
I'm looking at G.
Yeah, I'm looking at G, seems, does that help?
No, actually, you'd be better off looking at E.
At E?
At E.
Okay.
Okay.
Because E is showing the actual.
Oh, I see the wraparound.
Okay.
So you're talking about all the way to the left side of the.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we're looking at, the PD6 area comes down here and then ties back into the property at the corner. So this area has to be graded.
I think this is the corner he's talking about.
It was recognized that that has to be dealt with in some way so that it can occur.
Yeah.
So there's some language massaging that's taken place to make sure that that can be done as a part of the no work can occur outside of PB six until that's done. Well, in order to accommodate that work in PB six, this is a necessary piece of construction. Clear as mud?
Yep.
Pretty minor.
I had a question. What are supposed to be in exhibit A and B? And do we have them?
Yeah, we have them. Exhibit A is the legal description of the entire property.
Okay. Which is this?
That's.
Yep.
Okay.
There's a couple of legal descriptions.
And then B is a legal description of the property that the village is in, village property.
Yeah, let me revise that only a little bit. Exhibit A is the legal description of the property that will ultimately be part of the development. The plan and hope is that that is the entirety of the PPDD district.
Right.
But it is possible that some portion of that may not be part of the development, for whatever reason. And so the notion here is simply that the exhibit to the declaration accurately describe the property that's going to be part of the development, because that's all that the declarant under the declaration can subject to the declaration, only what it owns and controls.
Okay.
So A's the one with 23 courses, right?
In the.
Which one? I mean, there's two descriptions by NEF here.
Yeah, there are. Maybe we're talking about different documents. If we are, I apologize.
I was looking at the list of documents that came with the.
In the development agreement, A is the legal description of the entire PPDD district. In the declaration, and this is what I was referring to because it's omitted from the declaration.
You were only talking about the declaration.
In the declaration, it's intentionally omitted because the issue then will be what property actually makes up the development at the point in time in which that's filed.
Well, what property is that? That's what I mean. It's not part of the plan that they've been reviewed.
It will be either the entirety of the PPD district, the entirety of what is described in exhibit one to the development agreement.
Yeah.
Or it will be as much of that as is part of the development. If, for instance, there were a parcel that ultimately didn't end up being part of the development.
Yeah. As negotiations still go ongoing in a couple of parcels.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
The document itself is looking a little better than it once did, in my opinion anyhow. It's pretty good.
Well, this is good to hear. So where have we gotten? Is it a?
Well, I mean, I think some considerable changes have been made, and I think that those changes were ones that we all agreed upon at some point, or at least talked about. There were a couple little small points. Do you want to maybe after the meeting talk about them, or you want to talk about them?
We can talk about
them
now.
They're very small. I'm talking about almost editing type thing. Nothing.
Go right ahead.
It's nothing. But I'm because I'm not going to be here next week. I'll also be in next town. So I can't be everywhere. So I'm
next week was the planned vote.
I may not even get to vote. Yeah, that's a terrible thing. But on the other hand, I'm just, some of these are very picky, and others may be more meaningful, but at the top of page two, now this is I'm looking at the draft, the 110-14 draft, which.
Are you looking at the covenants and restrictions or the developer's agreement?
No, the Pinecrest Development Agreement.
On 110, you should have a 127.
I have a 127.
Yeah, I know, but the 120, the font is a little small for me. I don't want to test myself here. I'm going to look at the 110. If you want to look at the 127, they're very similar. I didn't see all that differences, but I happen to make I have the 110 first for obvious reasons, and that's where I made my notes, and therefore.
I didn't bring the 110 draft.
But they're very similar. I don't think that they're substantially different. Anyhow, at the top of page two, the first word in the third line should be provisions of the agreement, obviously, but that's just a little nothing. noticed you took out the word leased in the later draft, which I think maybe Judd had mentioned. But I mean, everything, all of the property in PD 1 through 4 is going to be leased to retailers. Is that correct? Or put another way, is there any chance that 10%? Excuse me?
One of those is residential.
Well, I guess what I'm really, but it's all going to be under leases.
1 through 4 is essentially retail, but it includes restaurant.
It'll all be under leases. In other words, I guess what I'm really, I was just curious whether there was any chance that any portion of it would be occupied by the developer or some of it will be occupied by us. I mean, nothing significant that will cut in when we remove the word leased. It's not going to affect the significant initial occupancy date.
No, in fact, it actually helps it because it allows for the possibility that they could do a long-term ground lease. They could create another layer of ownership that isn't necessarily a lease, but it still has to be occupied.
Okay.
The emphasis is on occupancy now rather than leased and occupied.
On page 4, you see the bold words, project building improvements and pod project improvements.
Yep.
Okay. Right beneath that where it says the first or second floor of a dwelling, I was wondering, should that be of any dwelling? Or are we talking about a specific dwelling?
Where are you looking?
On page 4, I just thought that should be any. Again, some of these are not profound in any sense. But we're down to that level.
I think it could be right either way, okay. Frankly.
I'm just bringing them up. You can do what you want with them.
As long as you're on the developer's agreement. Right?
Yep.
And as long as you're in that neighborhood. Something that occurred to me, and it's under paragraph C, I believe that's the right paragraph, that relates to the sound issue. It tells us what we're going to do when there's a problem, but it doesn't tell us about how do we establish the baseline. And it seems to me that in order for C to be functional, we have to have a piece of baseline information that says this is the sound at prior to occupancy of the development.
It says by the professional comparing sound studies that document the pre and post construction sound level.
I understand that, but it doesn't direct a pre
to be done.
Construction sound study to be done, unless that's just assumed.
I think
it's better than assumed.
It's
in the zoning code. The zoning code, I'm looking now at section 1175.03 D2 requires that in conjunction with approval of a final development plan, now I'm reading, sound studies that document the current sound levels which provide the baseline. Measure.
I had a senior moment. Okay.
No. That was good thinking in anticipation of this language from the development agreement back when the zoning code was put together.
And under paragraph F, it refers to deliver. Forget it. Let's see where.
That work? Is the date on, I didn't check, is the date on page 7, do we know that date yet? The date for the entering into the easement? No later than we shall enter into
no.
The easement agreement?
No, because is going to be driven in part by the date the development agreement is finalized, executed, signed.
Should it be 30 days after or 60 days after?
Yes.
But the, but the exhibit is already in hand.
The form of exhibit is in hand. I believe there's still, the details of it still need to be finalized.
My exhibits run up to D. One set. Does this set run further? Let's see.
I don't think we have yet circulated the full form of the easement, which is exhibit F, I believe.
Exhibit F is just a plan that identifies easement areas. It doesn't describe. Is that correct?
Correct.
So should there be a time limit put in relative to the signing of this agreement?
I think there are some, yes, there should be a time limit put in. We can have a conversation as to what the appropriate time period should be, because there are several considerations that are going to go into that. I would say it would probably be a 60 to 90 day period.
The easement, in other words, this is what we're doing is we're taking village property and we're giving an easement for the purposes that are mentioned here. Isn't that a document that, apart from the date, we could see?
I think we're that far along with the planning of it, but I don't think he's identified exactly where the road's going to be. I don't think we're that far along.
Mayor, your comments probably would like to be heard by everybody.
I don't think we're that far along. I don't know that we know exactly where the roadway's going to be placed yet.
And this is contingent upon those parcels that are still out?
One of them might be. Yeah, there's still one parcel in the negotiation that might dictate where the road goes.
I just don't know. I don't think. Sorry.
Is there a way to craft this language in here, Jeff, such that some of these players to be named later, the establishment of some of these easements based on properties that are still under negotiation, can be driven by language in the developer's agreement such that we can execute on it with the idea that there'll be there may be some adjustment to it later on?
In this particular reference, we could probably change it to from date specific to a period of time after the final development plan is accepted and approved, and then within that time frame, 60, 90 days after the final development plan, we would have an easement agreement.
I'm still confused. We're talking about village property here, right?
Yeah, but how he's going to situate the road or which way it's going to go.
On the property.
Yeah.
And then after.
So the specifics of the easement, I mean, the concept of the easement on the property is knowable, but not exactly where it lies on the property? Is that the issue?
I don't think that's the entirety of the issue, no. I think there are a number of issues that could still arise depending on certain development plans, certain placement of roadways that may require additional specifics that we can't yet identify.
I guess my problem without overdoing it, getting a dead horse, I hate to say the village shall do something until I know some of the details. I mean, this could be.
How about with acceptance of the plan?
Yeah, some.
After planning and zoning accepts the plan.
I mean, I don't think anybody here is going to stand in the way of the easement. I think the question is, what are the details before we say yes?
Well, and that's why I'm suggesting that perhaps a change in the language to say, village and developer shall, let's just say 90 days following accept approval and adoption of the final development plan, enter into an easement agreement. The final development plan will have the parameters and some of the specifics that would be entailed in that easement that should hopefully give you comfort that there will be a secondary layer of approval prior to any obligation of the village to enter into an easement.
That's what we need.
Yeah.
A second layer of approval.
And it's going to be based on the final design plan, which is still
And Jordan just reminded me that a form of the easement has been circulated to Steve and I. I don't believe we have yet taken it to the next level to say, okay, here's a form and, you know, move it to, let's say, down to the 20-yard line where we can feel that it's in substantially close form to being completed.
One of my questions is, could the easement have any impact on any other residents of the village, commercial or residential?
The easements relate to
roads and
the property itself really is probably the key here, and that consists of an area south of Red Robin Restaurant,
which is a dream.
Where there's space right now where there could be, for instance, signage for the development. So it's not, other than the existing detention, it's not an area that's actively utilized for any purpose currently.
And when utilized, no one in that area, those areas will be impacted? That's my real...
Exactly, except perhaps benefited by the addition of more detention. So that's the gist of this provision.
Can I make one question or suggestion? If you're talking about 60 or 90 days after such and such a date, is this for us to execute? Is there going to be an ordinance requirement that we're going to have to go through? Any official council?
Probably not. It's planning and zoning will approve the final development plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to the extent that there's an ordinance, the ordinance really just directs the mayor by council to enter into the agreement.
What I was wondering was whether...
No, the final development plan will be a planning and zoning.
That's why we need to get our questions answered before it gets out of this chamber.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, I was thinking of sort of a different sort of thing, you know, sort of the normal... Three readings and 30 days to implementation is 120 days, right, from the time we see it to the time. If we went through a normal council process, so...
Well, we are. The ordinance is there.
The ordinance that we're looking at
right now
to execute.
Right.
Okay, so we won't need another, a further ordinance activity to deal with this one particular issue. Okay, that's fine. That answers my question.
I just, on page 7, I just wonder, this is, especially when I'm talking to lawyers, I always like to ask this question. It talks about the developer paying all the costs and expenses incurred in connection with the easement. It's just the top of the next page, little Roman numeral 4.
Yep.
Is that all, is that hard and soft costs? Is that a universal comment there on costs?
It's purposefully broad.
And then is the next paragraph, the small five, the Roman numeral 5, does that include potentially the cost of any eminent domain action that the village would have to bring?
Yes.
It includes includes the cost of that. So the cost of the easement, the cost of eminent domain, if necessary, all paid by the developer.
Yes.
And, yes, it would be backwards a little bit, but not very far back. On page, I believe it's page six, under D, double I, are there any other interests? Is Jacobs have any say so on what might impact this, the use of that property?
I think Red Robin does.
Red Robin does?
I think so.
Do we have to, does there have to be some kind of a sign off from them?
Do they have to draw an easement?
The drainage is for them. They have to be sure that there's the other drainage provided.
Yeah, the short answer is yes.
Right.
The long answer is that, going to Herb's question a moment ago, the village is obligating itself to grant the easement here as set out. A condition of doing that may very well be approval for a change to that retention basin by Red Robin.
It's making it our obligation to do that with Red Robin?
It is, but at our cost.
At their cost.
Because we're not the property owner. We don't have the ability to approach them and ask for that permission. The village has that authority.
At your cost, but whose effort?
Our effort.
In my world, effort is an element of cost. So it would be again at our cost, and obviously we can discuss the logistics of that first, but it's the village's property, so we can't.
So we have the standing to go to the neighbor and say, we're doing this, we need your concurrence with it.
The village is the party that has to advance the process, yes, but I think in working with the developer team to obtain the necessary consent approval, it would be the process going forward.
And obviously, as a practical matter, the plan here would be to reach out to the appropriate folks at Red Robin, and probably know nothing about this project, and tell them the good news that their restaurant is now about to be at the front door of this beautiful new development. And the only thing we need is their permission to reconfigure a detention basin so that the driveway can go directly by their restaurant.
I mean, Red Robin doesn't have an older restaurant in Orange Village that falls in its.
Don't they think their restaurant's in Beechwood?
I don't know. It's
right, what's next?
Okay, most active on your range, and that's it for me. All right. At the top of page 8-9, this is just, you know, again, it says applicable local ordinance and regulation. I just wonder, I mean, should state be in there just to make it kind of a more thorough statement of where there might be some local and state ordinances? Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of concerned that somebody else will stick their nose in with a regulation that might not have been accounted for in the strict language of the document.
Well, it is county regulations for the removal of septics.
Right, so, you know, that's, I'd like to see it say applicable state, county, now that the mayor mentions it, and local.
Oh, local's county.
Well, I don't know what local is. That's the whole thing. I mean, a lot of things are local. It depends on how fast you're moving, I guess, but.
My general answer to that would be.
Split accordance by law.
I'm sorry?
Split in accordance with law. It's all encompassing.
Well,
I think state regulation is implied. We will clarify it.
I just said, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
we'll clarify it.
I want to be able to sleep at night. Nothing else. Okay, let's see. The other thing, I mean, let me just, this is probably for Mr. Burns. But is there, I mean, I was reading this, I came across the phrase generally accepted commercial construction practices and procedures. Is that as well a known body of information as generally accepted accounting principles, for example? I mean, that phrase kind of looked at, I thought, did somebody just change a couple words and, not to deceive me, but to enlighten me, but I'm...
You might...
I mean, is there a book of generally accepted accounting
This kind of goes, this is not entirely dissimilar to our conversation about reasonableness. It provides for an objective standard that it is not the same as GAAP for accounting.
No.
It is not as broad or as a hard line, but it still provides a understandable benchmark that an objective standard that we can go out and be able to say, you know, this is what most contractors would do.
Not a generally accepted means of commercial construction. And that was really the point here. That there are a range of activities that are generally accepted. And
the developer will pick the cheapest one?
Well, generally the developer will pick the appropriate one for the particular construction activity, cost being a consideration. This limits that a bit by saying that if they're comparable cost methods, the one that is less invasive is going to be selected.
Okay. So, on the next page, on page 10, just again, some of these are quite small. In the last line in the paragraph. The partial paragraph at the top of page 10, in the second line, second from the bottom in that paragraph, to the extent that such debris, dust, or dirt caused, I mean, the rest should be past tense, I think. I mean, I'm just bringing that to your attention. Mm-hmm. Well, the word should be caused, but I mean, it's a very, you know, a minor point. I'm just, we're down to very small points, thank goodness, we're down to some very small points.
Okay.
The causes?
No, it's a verb in this case.
I've noted it to review it and revise it accordingly.
Okay. I noticed you changed the paragraph about the $500,000. That's stated much more understandably in the new draft. I appreciate that. On page 12, I just had a again small editing point, but the way going through, whenever you've gone section Roman numeral capital letter, you've set it off with parentheses, and all of a sudden on here we got to section 9, paragraph K, and we've set it off differently. I don't think it means anything differently, but there's one place where it's not set off with parentheses. And
I got it.
That's a small point.
Four lines from the bottom of B.
Although
at the very end of B, I do set it off with parentheses. So.
Well, whatever you want to do is fine. But
no, you are right to note the need for the parenthetical.
All right. In the notices section, which is also on that page, again, small point, the word address should be addressed. That's, you know, it's mailed, paid, and
Yep, thank you.
But the question I have is, what is this if given personally? I mean, I, in a notice provision, I'm any notice of communication required or permitted shall be given by either party to the other shall be deemed sufficiently given. If personally, but there's no other words, I mean, is it personally delivered, or, I mean, what are we talking about is what I'm trying to say. I got a little lost there. I understand the mail by certified. Excuse me?
It's a cordial, come over, we want to give this to you very nicely, sir.
But who do we, I mean.
I think.
There's a missing word.
Personally delivered and hand-delivered, is that what?
We could flip the words given and if, so it would read shall be deemed sufficient. I gotta, I'll rework the language. I understand what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
It seems to dangle a little.
Alright.
Yeah, just missing a word, delivered, to be, I think.
Alright.
Might have fallen out in some of the various editing.
Zipping right along here. I just had a question. This is not about the, it's not about the drafting, but on page 14, it says the developer shall promptly request the village council to amend two sections of the PPD deregulations set forth in Exhibit H. Of course, we don't have that.
Oh, wait, you have the ordinance for that.
I know, well, but we don't know.
I believe that was included in the exhibits that were.
Well, it's listed as a page, but I don't, it's not there. Not to be, it's a blank page. I mean, isn't it? Yes.
Well, there's a separate one page in the packet.
I think.
No, no, I know there was an amendment, I know there's.
I think we had separately circulated the exhibits.
That's the ordinance, but it, so it's, I guess.
It's land planning, land site development principles, that's Exhibit H, basically.
In that whole packet, but it was separate.
Okay, well, I didn't, I'm not sure I got that, but okay, so that is, I guess, in my only, you know, the sentence is unusual in this sense, to me. I'm assuming that you're thinking that the village council is going to amend this section of the PPDD. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's not, you normally when something's brought to our attention, it's not brought to attention as, here's something that we asking you to do. Of course, it's already in the contract that the request will be made, but it's not in the contract that the changes will be made?
Well, we can't obligate council to adopt an ordinance without going through all of the appropriate measures that you need to. So it is providing some deference to the developer to say, we support, or at least from a broad village perspective would support it, but obviously it's still subject to council
approval. So he's hoping that when the request is made, we'll respond the way he would like. And he thinks we will. He's confident that we will. Aren't you?
We are, and just to be clear, because it sounds like you don't have the document in front of you.
No,
these are really minor corrections.
I could use a copy, though.
Of the text.
If you got a copy, I could use a copy, thank you.
They aren't what I would call substantive corrections that were picked up during the course of negotiation of the development.
I mean, so are they, obviously they're meant to be compatible with what's in the document about sound and so forth?
Sure, of course. Actually, they are in part to make the text compatible with the development.
Okay, that's what I was thought that's where we were headed, but I just need to be sure because I hadn't seen some of the working parts. On page 14 at the bottom, now this is the successors in interest paragraph that we've talked about from time to time. That one sentence there, and then again, this may just be, you know, the developer shall notify each transferee of the obligations hereunder, and the same are binding on such transferees, provided, however, the village reserves the right to require each and any such transferee to independently adopt, ratify, and confirm all such rights and obligations hereunder in writing. In my world, that would be prior to the transfer, from transferor to transferee.
Okay.
Can we put that timing into that sentence?
Yes, we could put it in there. I think the thinking in this is that it's it's a bit of belt and suspenders. We are clearly stating that if you are a successor to the developer in whole or in part, you are still on the hook for the obligations of the developer. You are, in essence, stepping into the shoes of the developer. The village, for peace of mind, has the right to obligate you to
put it in writing.
Put it in writing.
Right.
So there is absolutely no room to argue. We could say prior to transfer, certainly.
I would like to see that. I mean, that's when I'd like to see the writing that they've accepted it, frankly.
The only wrinkle that I'll add to
that is... At the time of transfer, in a closing sense, let's say.
The only wrinkle that I'll add to that is that under this provision, there are certain transfers, related party transfers, that are not subject to village approval.
Right, I understand.
So the language here that allows the village to request the written acceptance of the obligations in those instances could occur after the fact, because the village, since the village doesn't have an approval
in those instances,
it might not be aware of the transfer until after the fact. I'm not suggesting that that's even in the cards. I'm simply suggesting that that's an instance where the language regarding before or contemporaneous might not work, because the village might learn after the transfer that there's been a transfer.
Isn't that the problem, that we learn after the transfer that we now have to go out and seek a ratification, adoption, and confirmation?
I think that goes to Jeff's point.
Yes, but the point is that the agreement will act in such a manner that the ratification is not legally necessary. They are legally bound to this agreement by virtue of being the transferee. The ratification would be simply for peace of mind, for going forward to cut off any possible argument that they weren't aware of all the obligations. In addition, there is the remote possibility of some sort of involuntary transfer, a foreclosure where a lender or mortgagee comes in, acquires the property, they are still subject to this agreement. It would be difficult to predicate that involuntary transfer on them for signing a ratification.
I guess what I was I read the paragraph, what I said to myself is, when will the village be aware that there has been a transfer taking place? In any of those cases where it's not one that has to be asked for approval beforehand.
We have to consent to it.
There's some, to some we
to
do.
Confirm any
well, but we're discussing ones where you don't have to consent to it because you can't.
Oh,
I believe that prior notice is required. There is notice and consent. There are some transfers which require notice but not consent, and there are some transfers which require both notice and consent. In each instance, notice is required.
Okay, well, let me read that. Okay.
But
if notice is required, then it'll give us a chance to act, and we would no doubt ask for.
But Jeff, a transfer doesn't release the developer from his obligations to that point, right? We talked about that.
Correct.
Okay.
Up to that point.
He remains liable for those things.
Prior to the transfer.
The developer, whoever that may be at any point in time, is obligated to fulfill their obligations under this agreement until such time that they are no longer the developer.
But I thought that even if they're no longer the developer, they maintain some obligation or responsibility.
To the extent